Hey everybody, this is your host Matt Brady of the Funny Stop Podcast. I'm here to tell you that I will not be featured on this episode. It's just going to be my co-host Devin talking to our guest who was the headliner last week at the Funny Stop Comedy Club, Tracy Kanan. The reason I would not be interviewing her was because during the day of this podcast, I had a show to do. So I couldn't get on. I had to go do my show. So if you could, hang back, relax, listen to this podcast that my co-host Devin did. Guarantee you it's going to be a very great one, very funny one. Enjoy.
All right, this is our second Funny Stop podcast of the week. Before we did the host, and now we're having the podcast with the headliner of the weekend, Miss Tracy Kanan.
Woohoo!
Hello.
Princess of Parodies.
Princess of Parodies, and she's doing two shows tonight. They're expected to be sold out. Tracy, is there like Facebook or anywhere where we can find you and see when you're going to be back in town?
The website's probably the best place, princessofparodies.com, and that's P-A-R-O-D-I-E-S, princessofparodies.com.
All right. Well, since we're a little pressed for time, we're just going to dive right into it. There's a lot going on, so you're probably going to hear some noise. But and even if it's not noise, it's
the tragedy part of the comedy when shit goes wrong.
Well, actually, shit's going right because they're freaking out because it's supposed to be packed. Tight. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a good problem to have.
Actually, oversold.
Yeah. Does that happen a lot?
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes?
I always like to say I'm the funniest bitch you never heard of. But I seem to pack out shows and I seem to get standing ovations from time to time. So I'm pretty lucky girl.
You say that like it's such an average thing.
I don't think it's average, but
I mean, par for the course.
I get more than my fair share, I would have to say.
Well, that is, happy girl. What's that like to feel?
Oh, to get a standing ovation?
Yeah.
The first time it happened, I just thought I went too long and everybody had to go pee, but then nobody went to the restroom. So I was like, yay, me. It's cool. It's really cool because you know you touch somebody then. That's the whole point of doing this, is just to touch lives.
To give somebody that experience?
Yeah, just to make them forget about their shit, you know, because they're so wrapped up in your shit for an hour. It's empowering. I really enjoy it. I love what I do. I've heard other comics say that we've never seen anybody love to perform as much as you.
That is great to hear, because there's enough burnt out people in the world, so it's nice to hear somebody who still has their heart in it.
I love it. Every show is a gift, and I didn't realize it until a year ago. I had they found a cyst on my thyroid, and I had part of my thyroid taken out. When they take out part of your thyroid, they take out your vocal cords to remove your thyroid and to put everything back in, and there's a 50-50 chance that I wasn't going to be able to sing again. And I was shitting a brick there for a while, but my voice came back in about 7 to 8 weeks. And then just from then on, every show is a gift, because I almost lost it. And you know, I became a stage hypnotist in that time.
Did you?
So I needed something to do. But
what was that transition like?
To go from comedian to stage hypnotist?
Yeah.
It's certainly a different side of your brain. Because with the stage, as being a comedian, you're the star of the show. And as a hypnotist, you're the host, and it's your job to make everybody else the stars of a show. So it's a different mindset, but I find both very, very gratifying to, you know, make other people's day through hypnosis, or make it their day because they were laughing at my troubles for a little bit. So
either way, just as long as you're performing, you enjoy it.
I just love performing.
So how'd you get your start?
I have Cleveland to thank for that. Years ago, I mean, I've always been into theater and piano and dance and that sort of thing. I put all of that on hold to start a promotional products business in Florida. I came back home to visit my mom, who wanted to see Tony and Tina's wedding, which was being at the, I don't even know where it was in Cleveland, but I know they had like 600 shows. I saw the show. I absolutely fell in love with it, and I swore if Tony and Tina's wedding ever came to my town in Bradenton, Florida, I was going to be in it. 6 months later, they held auditions. I got the part I wanted. And to prepare for the part, I took an improv class, and then I met some comedians. And when I did an improv piece as a bank teller with Tourette's, everybody in the room just fell apart and thought it was the funniest thing they'd ever seen. And they said, you know, when you're done with the show, you're coming with us and doing stand-up. And I said, okay. It worked for me because I had a small business. I could create my own performance schedule. It wasn't as intense as community theater. And so that's how I got my start in comedy. It was literally because I was inspired by Tony and Tina's Wedding, the Cleveland production.
So everything just kind of fell into place after you found something you like doing.
Pretty much.
That
pretty much.
Sounds like you've been living the dream a little bit.
For the last 12 years, yes. Lucky girl.
But so this wasn't exactly just a happy accident that you ended up performing and doing that, though, was it? Because I did read that you you graduated with a degree having something to do with, like, music.
Correct. I actually grew up in Berea, Ohio, which is the west side of Cleveland. I went to Otterbein College, now Otterbein University in Westerville, Ohio. I've been playing piano. There's pictures of me playing an organ at 1.5.
Wow.
But I started taking lessons at 4 from the Cleveland Institute of Music, and then I got kicked out of there and ended up at Baldwin Wallace College, and I literally burned through, I don't know, 8 or 10 piano teachers in 8 or 10 years because nobody knew what to do with me because I kept improvising. I kept making up the pieces the way I wanted them to sound. So I've always done music, and it wasn't until high school that I found a teacher at Baldwin Wallace that said, all right, Trace, we're going to do it your way, but then you're going to do it mine. So I had to play every piece twice. I played it the way I wanted to, and then I played it the way she wanted it to. And that held me through the tough years when all the girls dropped out of music in high school. Ended up going to Otterbein, getting my degree. So I have a Bachelor of Arts in Music and Business with a minor in Piano Performance, Music Composition, and Electronic Music, which cost my parents $60,000, and I now use it to sing dick jokes in comedy clubs. So we all have our own special way of ending
that's
up
your
somewhere.
Thank you, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, pretty much.
But you enjoy singing the dick jokes.
I love it.
So as parents, they should be, and you make money doing it.
I do all yeah. right. You know, yeah. Have I earned enough to pay back the $60,000? No. You know, not even in all 12 years if I made $60,000 doing comedy. Maybe 59.
So you still run a, do you still run a small business as well?
I do. I had the promotional products business since 95 when I moved to Florida, and then I actually sold my accounts a year ago, Christmas Eve. So I no longer do the promotional products, but I do hypnosis now. I'm a certified hypnotist, so I'm a life enhancement hypnotist. I also sell travel, and then I do comedy. So I do a lot of things that pay poorly, but it all adds up.
but you keep some different income flows coming in.
Yes. I also have a building that I manage, which is a little additional income as well. So it kind of helps when everything else doesn't happen. So.
Well, as a performer, you're kind of waiting on somebody else's call sometimes.
Pretty much. You know, I had 3 shows in January, and then this month I've had 15. So it's a feast or famine. I think I have 8 or so next month, and then April, I don't know what I'm going to do. I got to fill some dates, so.
You hear that? Anyone who, well, probably not anybody listening to this podcast, but if you do have something you need booked, open dates. Get at her.
Exactly.
Did you have any particular influences as far as like parody music or even just music in general that made you want, besides what was the show called? Tony and Tina's Wedding?
Oh, Tony and Tina's Wedding. As far as musical comedy, I have always loved Weird Al Yankovic. I think anybody who does parodies, you know, he's the baseline for success. The difference, what my show's a little bit different than what he does is because you can play his records over and over and memorize the lyrics. I'm basically a babysitter for drunks, and I only got maybe 15 seconds to capture your attention. So my parodies are, you know, sometimes not more than 2 lines, because I got the funny and it's time to move on. I don't have you know, somebody's leisure time that they can listen to it over and over. So he was a huge influence. Years ago, I saw Judy Tenuta, who was also a huge influence. I'm trying to think. So my act would be a little bit based on those, but, you know, I also toured for 2 years with the Disgruntled Clown, who's a performer here at Funny Stop and a good friend. And he's been very influential in my act as well, and getting me out and
helping, just helping
clubs.
You find places.
Yeah, just helping
like
me find places to perform, and also honing my act quite a bit. So, and probably some of my best comedy stories are from performing with the Disgruntled Clown for 2 years.
Do you want to share any of those stories with us, possibly?
Nah, another time. Yeah. We only got 20 minutes.
Don't want to get anybody.
I wouldn't even know which story to share.
As a musician, you do music and comedy.
Correct.
At the same time. Yes. Has anybody ever offered to, like, give you a tour rider or anything like that?
A tour rider?
Yeah, like the list of, like, requirements for you to come to a show. Has anybody, like, booking you for a college or anything like that ever given you that kind of...
You know, I have focused my efforts... I consider myself an adult entertainer. I'm not a college kid entertainer, so I don't pursue that route.
Okay.
I look for strictly adult venues. My target market is 35 to dead. 35 and under I could give a fuck about. I don't relate to that demographic as well, and I don't see any reason why I should beat myself.
I don't have a front, people.
You know, beat myself up over it or try and make myself cool and accepted by the 25 and 30 year olds and the college kids. I just, you know, if they come to the show, great, they'll have a good time, but I'm not going out of my way for that market.
See, that's really cool, because that's one of the first times I've actually, because a lot of people like to think that they are, you know, they're the end all be all for any group, and it's kind of as far as, and not to say that people who are under your target
right
wouldn't enjoy it,
right,
but hearing you basically just say what,
well, one of the most valuable lessons I learned was from another comic. When I came off stage one time, I go, it just wasn't my market. And she's like, you know what? If they're sitting in their seats, that's your fucking market. It doesn't matter who the fuck they are. That's your audience that night, and it's your job to make them laugh. Good lesson to learn. But you can also stack the deck in your favor. And that's the part that maybe she wasn't as good at, but I'm really good at that. So I just assume I know who my market is. I chase that market. I don't, you know, there's a better living in niche comedy than there is in comedy club comedy. You know, it's fun to do clubs for me, but my focus is the niche comedy, and it's focusing on those adults 35 to dead that make me happiest. So I don't have to just sit there and take comedy club audiences because my show is so honed for other markets.
That sounds like a great little piece of information for anybody who's thinking about getting into it. The whole idea of neither person is wrong about you know, making the people who are there laugh, but like you said, you know.
Right. I just took what she did and modified it. You know, she had a great point, and, you know, that changed my act a little bit, so it was more appealing. But then I just decided, you know, I don't have to work clubs. There's a good living to be made outside of clubs. I think it's actually better.
Well, that'd be like me going into a VFW and then working a bunch of stoner jokes or something like that, which is
not the right venue.
They might think it's funny that night, but overall,
yeah.
Is it the best idea?
No, you'd be better if you're doing stoner material. Find where the potheads are.
Yeah.
Probably
exactly.
Not at the VFW.
Or whatever you want to do. Whatever, you know, if I talk about Twitter or something like that.
Yeah.
They don't have that app on their phone, so what are they going to, you know.
One of my friends doing comedy is a cancer survivor, and he's totally looking at a corporate market with a motivational message as a cancer survivor. You know, he'll make a hell of a lot more money as a motivational speaker than he will work in a club, so.
Yeah.
Find your niche.
So do you have any preference as to where, what types of places you work, or is it just kind of...
Not really. When I toured with the Disgruntled Clown, he was an absolute master at getting out of the way venues. So, and lucky for me, I got really good at venues that are just near impossible to work. So I can literally walk into a biker bar or a bar where people aren't expecting comedy, and I've learned how to master that room and make them watch me and get their attention, which is a lot of things. Comics don't know how to do that because they've never had to, because they work the comedy clubs where it's expected that they're going to do comedy. I trained on venues that they didn't know comedy was coming. They're there to get laid and get a drink and then comedy. Where the comedy club is comedy, get a drink, get laid.
Yeah.
So you got to understand the psychology of the venue you're working and approach it that way.
So it comes right back to the know your audience.
Exactly. Get in their head.
Would you say that your work doing the promotional business, do you think that has a lot to do with the way you consider how you do your stand-up or where you pick the venues and stuff
yeah.
like that?
Absolutely. Any kind of business class you can take in marketing or advertising, I'm amazed at how many comics just don't have a fucking clue about the business of comedy. And they bitch me out. You're like, oh, you know, look at Little Tracy, Little Miss Marketing Whore. Well, fuck you. Guess what? My audience is sold out tonight. Where's your fucking audience? Oh, that's right. You didn't do a fucking poster or postcards to get your name in front of them. So, you know, don't be hating me because I fucking did it right.
You know? Just because people know where to find you.
Yeah. Yeah. So hate me. Yeah, I get that a lot.
And stuff anybody could do.
It is.
Some people choose to do
it. It's easy. And then, you know, you get the other attitude. Like I did a comedy festival in Boston. They didn't want me to put up my posters because it put me at an unfair advantage over the other comics. I'm like, fuck them. They have access to printers. They can get posters made.
Like you can't find a FedEx?
Really?
A Kinko's, whatever.
Punish me because everybody else is fucking stupid. Okay, do it, you know? So I went around to every other venue that wasn't guy and I hung up my posters, and guess what? My show sold out. So yeah, marketing and advertising and basic business courses, every comic should have that. I mean, that's...
Well, and as a venue, you want your shows to sell out, so
yeah,
I don't see what the...
Exactly, because...
Why fight you over it?
It makes you look good because you've packed the house, you sold more liquor, and then personally, I sell more merchandise, so I make more money.
Win-win-win for everybody.
Win-win-win.
Audience, because
exactly.
There's more people and they're having a good time.
Exactly. If a comic thinks that their only job is to just sit there and write funny shit, guess what? They're not going anywhere. There's lots of comics, and you know, maybe I'm not the most original act or the best act or the most creative or the brightest, but I deliver a hell of a show, and I'm pretty good at marketing, and I will kill anybody with natural talent that doesn't have a fucking clue about the business.
Well, you tell people what to expect, and you give it to them.
Exactly.
So they know what they're getting. You deliver.
Exactly.
You're doing it.
And maybe I'm arrogant, but fuck it. I have a sold-out show tonight. I can say that shit. So
yeah, I'm sitting here doing the podcast, so for free.
Of course you are.
But what was the last thing I wanted to ask you? Is there a lot of the stuff that you've actually been saying, I just graduated college and I took marketing classes, and she is literally reciting things that I have had people tell me. So if you're listening to this, you just got education for free. I am 60 grand in debt with that knowledge, and she just gave it to you for free. Is there anything else you want to say to wrap this up so you can talk to the people?
Hey, I don't know. I can't think of anything. Tracy Kanan, the Princess of Parodies, classically trained pianist that snapped to sing dick jokes in comedy clubs. PrincessofParodies.com. Golly. I don't know what else. I was just thank you for taking the time to do this.
Thank you very much for doing this with me. And I'm going to quit taking up some of your time. Tracy Kanan, Princess Parodies. She's at the Funny Stop tonight. And I'm sure she'll be back. So make sure you check out her website so you can see when she's back at the Funny Stop. Stop in at the Funny Stop. Call, ask about it, whatever you want to do. Because I'm sure if they get enough calls about it, then they're going to, you know.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
I don't know when. But soon. It'll happen.
It'll happen. She'll be back, and you're going to want to see her.
Next winter, and hopefully it won't be negative 12.
You know, horseshoes and... different saying, but you get what I'm saying. You can shit in one hand, hope in the other, whatever. That old thing. But the address of the club and the phone number. 1757.
1757 State Street. 330-923-4700.
Thank you very much for doing this with me, Tracy.
Thank you.